Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
Ohio, and Chris Michael Ward. And I want to say hello to all my listeners from north to south, east to west, and all the ones in the 33 countries around the globe for tuning in. I appreciate you. And for people who are on their tablets or smartphones, if you want to call and talk to our guests, just dial 347-945-6003 and hit the 1 key. But if you don't want to talk, that's fine. You can stay in the background, and I won't bother you. But if you do want to talk, hit the 1 key, and I know that you want to talk. So without further ado, I want to say hello first to my co-host, Chris. How you doing, Chris?
Hello, Terry. How are you? Happy Friday.
Yes, it's good. The weather where I'm at is beautiful. Clear day. The thunderstorm is behind us. I'm grateful for that, you know. And I'm so grateful for our special guest, Courtney, who is with us tonight. And she got a very informative interview that she's going to share with people. And it's going to be about, you know, how to awaken the unlimited potential of empaths. And, you know, your highly sensitive side, your intuition and the visionary, she's going to show you how to tune that gift in. And she's going to share her four gifts, you know, so we'll learn more. And with that being said, I want to say hello to our guest, Courtney. How are you, Courtney?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on your show and share about the gifts. Sensitivity is exciting.
Oh, we are more excited. We are happy you're here, trust and believe, because I know sometimes I believe that I got a good sense of intuition And I like to hear more about that, you know, and a lot of people out there, they feel like they can feel certain things. So your topic is going to be something that is going to be something that we can get something from, some meat, you know, to eat on and chew on. So before you went that route, were you previously somebody who was able to see the future or, you know, had intuition that was strong or psychic, you know, or whatever, that you went this direction with this book of yours, Awaken the Unlimited Potential of Empaths?
Yeah, well, the psychic part of it falls into the gift of intuition, and I go into intuition in the different types. And so, you know, psychic phenomenon is definitely part of that spectrum of intuition. I had several powerful transformative personal experiences. I didn't actually put them in the book, but they're what led me to researching and uncovering the gifts. And that was about 20 years ago that I had a couple of really powerful experiences, and I just couldn't deny that they were psychic events or intuitive events.
Well, would you say it?
Yeah, well, I can share. Do you want me to share about what happened?
Oh, yeah, we want to know. We know.
Okay, okay, sure. So the first one, the first thing that happened that really made me aware, I was living in Missoula, Montana. I was going to school at the time for my bachelor's degree in psychology. I was young, married, and had a baby while also going to college. So I was very busy, young woman. And I had a dream that one of my husband's friends, or, you know, I guess associates, acquaintances would be a good word to put it. I saw in a dream that he was driving. He blew through a stop sign, broke the stop sign down, drove through it. Cops came. They opened up his trunk, and in the trunk there was all kinds of drugs, like cocaine, heroin, all kinds of crazy stuff, and a bunch of guns. In the trunk. And then so the next thing I saw in that dream was he was in front of a judge, and he had his hands behind his back, and they were in, you know, he was in cuffs, and the judge was basically sentencing him. So I woke up from that right away, and I shook my husband at the time awake, and I said, hey, this is important. I want you to stay away from this guy, and I think something bad's going to happen. And he said, you know, I think you're just being paranoid. Don't worry. You know, that's not going to happen. But it was the first time that I ever saw a warning like that I can remember very clearly. And then about a month later, it happened on TV where we saw him. we saw the guy in my dream in front of the judge, just like it had played out in the dream, with his hands behind his back, cuffed, being sentenced for, you know, for drug trafficking. So that was the first experience that I went, whoa, what was that? And I couldn't deny that there was a warning. And then a couple years later, we graduated from college. We moved to Seattle, Washington. We actually ended up getting separated and divorced, and I was a single mom at the time. And this other event happened where I essentially prevented a fire in a brownstone in Seattle. It was my girlfriend's apartment, and she asked me to help move a bed. Our other friend was going to move in with her. They were going to save money and then move to New York. And so the other friend who was moving in, she was getting rid of all of her stuff, and they asked me to move her bed. And when I showed up to pick up her, and Rebecca was my friend, and her two boys, we drove over to our other friend, Amy's place, over on the other side of Seattle in Queen Anne. I had this feeling. I had a strong gut feeling where I shouldn't move the bed. And I actually heard those words in my mind, don't move the bed.
Oh, wow.
When I picked her and the boys up. Yeah, Rajan and Kite were in the middle. And I had my hands on the wheel, and I pulled away from the curb, and I heard, don't move the bed. Like my own thoughts, but maybe a little stronger, a little louder.
Right.
So I immediately said to her, I mean, not immediately, but after a little while as I was driving and the feeling got worse and worse and stronger, I said, I think we shouldn't move the bed tonight. And she was like, you know, I'm sorry we inconvenienced you. You know, I don't want to turn back now. We're in it. We're in it. Let's just do it. Yeah, so I kept pushing the feelings down. We drove over to my other friend. Amy worked at, like, MAC Cosmetics, so she got off at, like, 8 o'clock at night. So we were over there by 8. She showed up. She buzzed us up. We went up into her apartment, and I was taking the bed apart. I had it all apart, and I had the frame in my arms. And the feelings got so strong that I just put the frames down, and I looked at Rebecca and I said, we need to leave right now and go back, because I had this just strong, overwhelming feeling.
Right.
So we jumped back in the truck. We went all the way back on the other side of town. I went up with her into her apartment, and then there was a thin layer of smoke in the second floor where her apartment was.
What?
And yes. Yeah, so she's fishing for her keys in her purse, trying to find them. I'm like, did you leave the oven on? You know, like, were you cooking cookies or something? And she was like, no, no. And I was like, well, what is it? She said, I don't know. And so she's trying to get her keys. The boys, small boys, are pushing on the door. We eventually open up the door. We get in, and there was a 3-wick candle burning on the windowsill that she had left, that she forgot about.
Oh, wow.
And the wax. Wax had gone all the way down on the floor, run all the way across the living room floor in front of the front door, a river of it. I stepped into the kitchen, and it was a small studio apartment, but there was a wall between the living room and the kitchen, and I just was in there for a second just trying to catch my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I had no idea what that was or how that happened. And so the boys... It was crazy. Yeah. So the boys, Raja and Kyrie, are in the living room, and they start screaming. Ah, and I'm like, what? Shh, right? Because this brownstone is small. Everybody can hear everything. So I come in, and Rebecca says, no, look. And so I look, and above the 3-wick candle is a window curtain, a bamboo window shade that's hanging down above the 3-wick candle, and it's black. And it's smoking, it's about ready to go on fire. So we got there just in the nick of time before it lit on fire.
You know, and I agree with you. I've had an episode before, you know, where I had this prompting in my head that was real intense that I paid attention to, and I'm grateful that I did. And I think a lot of people mess up because they always try to dismiss that quiet voice that they hear. They don't want to, it ain't nothing. And they wish they had it. If only they had paid attention to their insight.
Right.
You know,
it's very common. Yeah, and you don't necessarily listen to it. I think the difference for me with that experience is it got so loud. It really was like a full body, response, almost like an impulse, like, we need to leave right now. I mean, I felt like I had to pay attention to it or something was, I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. I had no idea she left the candle, but I did pay heed to it. And I think it's because it was so strong. It built up so strong and I tried to push it down and it didn't go away. And so because I'd had that, a couple of those dreams before, a couple years before, I think maybe that led me to having that kind of maybe trust, you know, that I'm not just crazy. There's something to this. I need to listen to my inner wisdom. But yeah, I think that that getting there in time definitely probably saved some lives. I do feel like it was important,
I know it did, because all I need is a couple of minutes. Fire connected to something that's combustible, and that's it. It'll go up in smoke, and the next apartment could have caught it and everything. So that was a blessing.
And nobody was home. Yeah, nobody knew. Yeah. Nobody knew. I mean, she forgot. She even forgot, because when we were at the door, I was saying, did you leave the oven on, you know? And she's like, no, no. And she couldn't figure it out. She couldn't remember. And the smoke was in the hallway. I mean, it was like a layer of sweet, smoke. And so it was obvious that something was cooking, burning. Excuse me.
But smoke,
so that's how I got started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That smoke part was thicker than what actually was that was singed inside the house. But on that note, I'm going to let Chris ask this question. Go ahead, Chris.
All right. Well, Courtney, you wrote a book called Four Gifts of the Highly Sensitive. And my question is, what is the best way to deal with sensitivity?
Yeah, well, after the fire happened, I recognized that there was something different about me, and I wasn't sure what it was. You know, at the time, I thought maybe this is some kind of divine intervention, or maybe it was an angel. I didn't know. And so I started researching, and I just kept researching. And so what I didn't know at the time was my sensitivity enabled me to probably read Rebecca when she got in the truck, because that's when the feeling started. And so what I was able to do and track all those years later is I feel like because I'm an intuitive empath myself, I was able to pick up on Rebecca. Because Rebecca knew she left the candle on. Even though she didn't consciously remember it, she knew. And so I look at it all those years later, having done all the research I have on sensitivity, and I put it in that box. But I looked at everything. And so I started to research intuition, because I felt like it was an intuitive ability that led me back. And so that's where I started. So the four gifts are basically about the four different types of personality traits or abilities that come with giftedness from sensitivity. And what sensitivity is essentially, the ability to perceive more information. Sensitive people perceive more information through sight, sound, tactile, which is feeling, touch, smell and taste. There's also other sensory systems that they've discovered now, like vestibular system, which is your sense of balance, proprioception, which is your movement through space, and awareness. And so there's like a bunch, and then there's interoception, which is your internal balance of your internal states. Sensitive people have more attunement to their environment through their sensory systems, but they also have faster emotional reactivity, which means they respond quicker emotionally to what they see, hear, and feel more than other people. So sensitive people are 1 in 4 or 1 in 5. We're about 20% of the population. And so that research was already out there about sensitive people. What I did is essentially went into that field of research and then carved out what I saw in my own research, which was these four different patterns of giftedness that come from sensitivity. And the first one's intuition. The second is empathy. The third one is vision or visionary qualities. And the fourth one is expression or artistic creation.
Well, I think I got all four then.
You might. Some people do.
Because growing up, I was told that I was a psychic. And I always tried to ignore some of the things that didn't seem like threatening, because I didn't want to have dead people and other kind of things coming into my, you know, mind. So I didn't want to get off into that. But the things that I did receive equally, when it's about someone that's going to get hurt or I'm going to get hurt or something like that, you know, that I was okay with, you know. And a lot of times when I would have dreams about different relatives, that they're gone now. And in my dream, they passed away. And before I knew it, like I'm all the way in California, I get a call from my family in Baltimore saying that particular relative has passed away. And I'd be calling them and say, are they okay? They said, well, they just passed away. How did you know? And it'd be something in my dream or whether I was awake and I thought it was a dream. It was, but I knew.
That might be empathy and visionary. Mm-hmm. That could be empathic, deeply empathic, or intuitive empathic and visionary because you see it. You see the event in your dream. So that's definitely a – I don't say it's one or the other. I do say that there's a convergence, right, or a blending of the gifts that happen sometimes where you'll have two or three. You'll usually have one that's really intense or powerful, or you see it often in your reality where it just works for you. It's very natural because it's an innate ability. You were born with it. But then there are the other things that I call it multisensory intelligence, because there does seem to be overlap between certain types of these gifts that come together that create a convergence, I think is the best way to put it, where you're using multiple forms of the abilities all at once. And it's pretty amazing.
Wow. That's wonderful. Well, I'm going to quick ask this question, but I'm going to have to get with you after the show is over, because I definitely would like to get a book to read more about that, because I do have what you call a crossover of those particular blessings or skills.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the book that I wrote, I wanted to write it because when I went out and set out on my own journey trying to understand what that was with those initial dreams that I had, which were warnings, and then the fire, which happened in, like, quote, unquote, real life, right? It played out in real time. I think that I wrote this book so that when somebody else had that same experience, they could find this book. Because I went to look for books that would help me understand it, and I really didn't find an all-in-one, like, compendium. So that's why I wrote this book, for individuals that think they might be sensitive and that they might have one of these abilities, or maybe multiple like yourself, that they would have something to go read and find out and learn more about it, and then how to live with it. Because it can be very challenging. Like you said, you didn't want to have the intuitive insights about danger or other people's business or, you know, stuff that you didn't really want to see, because that can be painful, right?
Right,
so the book kind of goes into, well, how do you establish good boundaries? How do you stay safe? How do you expand on your abilities? How do you use it to help in your work, in your career, and for your dreams? How do you make your dreams happen through using the gifts? And I think all of that is possible. It just takes time and patience, and it does take a little bit of hard work too. You got to focus on it.
It also shows me that I have good nuances. I can see stuff and I can pick up on things relatively fast, because I don't know if you know, on Facebook, you know how they have the little quizzes people take. I had one on the amount you could get, the highest was a 15, and it was about whether you are intuitive and stuff. And everybody kept saying, well, I got close, I got 12, I couldn't, but I got 15 spot on, you know. And I guess that's the way my brain is wired.
You might be a hypersensitive, actually, Terry. You might want to look into that. I mean, I go into it a little bit in the book, but hypersensitivity is a real thing. I mean, it's not clinical. So that's the other thing I like to share with people, because a lot of times people think sensitivity is like a disorder or a weakness or some type of disability, and it's not. So I think that's the other reason why I wanted to write the book, is to share that it is a beautiful gift. It does create sometimes stress in your life, especially when you're picking up information about other people, like you already mentioned, or you're so off the charts with it that you're receiving so much information, it can be kind of wounding
if you're not being careful with it, you can feel like it's hurting yourself. So hypersensitivity falls in that category. That's for people who are so far out on the sensitivity spectrum or scale that they're receiving so much information and not necessarily knowing, consciously aware of it, that it can cause imbalances like anxiety or depression or other types of things that come, because hypersensitivity is, it's real. I mean, it's not well understood, but I talk about that as well. When you're pretty far out on that curve,
it kind of makes you be a little uncomfortable around certain people because you've got like you can feel that they're not the person you need to be around, you know. And people, they come off, they're smiling in your face and everything, they come off pleasant, but it's something that's get inside of me, the hair on my neck stands up in the back, and this is real talk. But before I get off into that, I better let Chris ask a question, because this topic, oh my God, I love this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good topic. But my next question for you, Courtney, is, you know, Terry's written some books. I contributed 2 books that are still on Amazon. So how long did it take you to write and publish your book?
Oh, a long time, a long, long time. So I was in mental health. I was a mental health counselor for a long time. And when all this kind of woo-woo stuff started happening with me, you know, I was really deeply entrenched in the field of mental health, and so I kind of backed out of that and started transitioning into writing. And I wasn't a natural writer, so I had to work really hard at it. And publication is not easy. It's just not, and it's changed so much. And so I really set my sights on Hay House from the beginning, because they are a certain type of publisher that publishes self-help. And so my book was kind of it was always going to be like more of a self-help advocacy book, like you can do this yourself. The other part of it that I was really focused on with Hay House is because the content of it is not like a traditional standard. It might even fall into categories like New Age. I mean, I wouldn't classify myself as New Age, but some of the topics that I write about are definitely fringe. And so I knew Hay House would accept my topics and not just shut the door on me, but it took me a long time to get published with Hay House. I took a book proposal to them in 2012, and they rejected it, and then I worked hard on the book more and more, and I did another book proposal in 2018, and they accepted it, and I won the writer's workshop. And then it took me 3 years to write the book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I never gave up. I worked really hard. I was told no. I was told no many times by other publishers, and I kept working hard at it, and I put Hay House kind of as the top of my list, and I set my sights there, and I never gave up. But it was difficult. I had to work very hard.
Well, you know, Courtney, that labor of love, I'm sure, has helped a lot of people put their finger on what's going on in their life. You know, like, you got the 4 different gifts. Could you, for the benefit of my listeners, explain each gift so people can tell whether or not they fall in that category of having one of those gifts?
Yeah, I love the gifts. I think the gifts are so exciting. And even though it took me a long time to write this book, I still think it's way ahead of its time. So the gifts. Mm-hmm. The first one is intuition. Intuition is a ability to process information, mostly subconsciously. So information comes in to the mind, and it is kind of a mindless process because we're just, you know, we're not necessarily thinking about everything that we're taking in information-wise. And it's getting an answer to a question, a problem, and it comes in a flash. The answer comes in a flash. So it goes beyond regular logic or intellectualism, or 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, it really is a jumping right to the answer without knowing how or why you got there. So I heard one famous researcher say it's from going from A to Z without knowing how or why. And that really is a good way to explain it. But people who are intuitive are not just getting answers quickly without reason. They're also looking at patterns and making connections through a larger systems thinking approach. So they're not just solving for day-to-day problems. They're connecting, larger patterns within the system. And that is a larger way that intuition works for problem solving, where they're working on multiple levels with their intuition. And so intuitives are people who are CEOs that use their intuition on their job all the time. Intuitives are like psychic readers who use it to tap into the ethereal and be able to get messages for people. Intuitives are, they're everywhere. I mean, intuition is a natural ability that all humans have, but intuitives that I'm talking about who are sensitive intuitives or gifted intuitives are individuals who are using that intuitive side of themselves all the time, and it's a big part of their personality. They could be great poker players, and it's not just magical. It's actually like different facets and skills that coalesce into the intuitive process. So they're able to read body language really easily, or they're seeing subtle movements, facial movements, microfacial expressions, and that helps the intuitive be aware on another level and in tune through their intuition to help make decisions, or the right person to partner with if it's a business, or the right person to marry if it's a relationship. So intuitives are just lightning quick, super fast decision makers and get information through their subconscious without necessarily knowing how or why that process is happening. Then there's empaths. It's starting to hit critical mass now where people are really learning about empathy and empaths. But at one time, it wasn't as well known. In this book, I go into empathy and I basically classify different types of empaths. I think that's one of the advantages of this book versus others. Empathy is being able to feel within the mind and body and the spirit other people's emotions and thoughts, moods in their own body. And that sounds crazy, but it's real. So you can feel as an empath feelings from different spaces that you go into, different environments, the different people that you're around. And not only that, but a lot of times empaths can read into the moods or the currents that they're feeling in the situation, especially with others. And they're picking up on other people's motivations, the motivations behind it. So that's a really amazing ability. Did you have a question?
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
The third is visionary. So visionaries have a capacity to use their mind's eye, which is the imaginal field right in front of their eyes and their face. And they can use that field to use pictures, imagery. There's so many different parts of the visionary that a lot of people say, well, I'm not a visionary. But it depends, because visionaries use so many different facets of their mind's eye. And so sometimes it could be they're great with directions, spatial awareness, spatial reasoning. They're the quintessential problem solvers all the time. They're doing problem solving through their visual field. They're able to turn things over three-dimensionally, four-dimensionally, look at geometric objects in that visual field and problem solve. And so visionaries are engineers. They're construction people. They're city planners. They're feng shui practitioners who work in different spaces. They're architects, game designers. I mean, visionaries, there's so many different types of visionary, just like there's different types of empaths and there are different types of intuitives. And then the last one is the expressives. Expressive is, on all the research I did on sensitivity, one of the things that was interesting that I found was what's called aesthetic sensitivity. And so when I researched aesthetic sensitivity, I found that it was an ability to perceive beauty, more readily be aware and perceive beauty in an environment or with being around others, and then taking that and synthesizing through artistic fusion, through the own person's embodiment, creative works of art. So it could be writing, painting, dancing, music, I mean, you name it, any type of creative outlet that expressives use through their own embodiment, they create meaning through their art for humanity. So it's really about being human and using art as a way to communicate that through their own eyes and their own soul. So that's the four.
Well, that's very helpful. You know, what is your position on sleep studies where people have sleep studies not to see whether they stop breathing or not? The ones who be having, like, nightmares. Okay, would you consider nightmares and different dreams part of one of the things that you could call intuitive?
Yeah, well, those are night terrors, I think, is what you're describing. Night terrors are nightmares that are, you know, you wake up screaming in the middle of the night. Is that what you're thinking of, night terrors?
Yes, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, night terrors is really more of a dysfunction, a sleep disorder, where, you know, as sleep apnea is the disruption of the airway and the breathing, and it's very complex. But night terrors is more like a dysfunction of the visual cortex and the disruption of the chemicals that essentially your brain releases so that you stay, paralyzed through your REM sleep cycle. And so I wouldn't necessarily say that night terrors are intuitive, because it's more of a disorder of the brain and the sleep cycle. Whereas lucid dreaming, I would say, is a very intuitive process, because you're in the sleep cycle, you're deep in the sleep cycle, your body is basically paralyzed and unable to move, and you're going in those expanses, those dreamscapes, and exploring lucid dream content, which could be anything from healing to working within the boundaries of the sleep landscape to heal your own body, your own emotions, helping you solve problems with others. Lucid dreaming is fascinating. So I would say lucid dreaming is more of an intuitive capacity versus night terrors.
Yeah, because
night terrors is almost like a hallucination that you wake up from screaming.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many things that we don't even begin to understand that's out there in the atmosphere. And a lot of things, you know, people second-guess themselves, even like when people are going for a job. If you get to the door, and I don't care how long you've been out of work, and something say, don't do it, don't do it. You know, follow your instinct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting that you bring up, like, night terrors, because it's interesting when you start looking at the brain and brain function, because people who have hallucinations or people who hear voices, I mean, these types of descriptions, which fall well into the category of sensitivity, right? I mean, that's basically what I've been studying, is these anomalous experiences that don't fall into the normal category or range of clinical behavior. What happens when you start to look at the brain and look at these different areas are the experiences that people have. And they do run the gamut, right, from falling into more normal experiences and then to the extreme. And so they did a study down in Stanford where they studied individuals who they called intuitives. In the description of the experiences these people had, they saw, discarnate beings or people who had passed away, what we would call ghosts. They heard voices at times. They saw lights in the sky or other types of anomaly, right, that other people didn't see. In the study, they called them hallucinations.
Right.
And they basically had these individuals do a, like, Japanese puzzle, and they, of course, solved for it, even though they hadn't ever had this, you know, little puzzle before. And then they took pictures of their brain, right, in an MRI when they were doing the study. What they found was these individuals who they called intuitives had a thickened white matter in a certain area of their brain called the caudate putamen, and they linked that area with intuition. So they found out that these individuals had more intuitive experiences, including everything I just named and others, right, which could be considered supernatural. But they also opened up the study and tracked their family members, like their mom, dad, brother, sister. They also had it. So we know that intuition is genetic now. I mean, that's science. That's real science, hardcore science. And so from the thing that I find so refreshing about studies like this that are coming out now is that people who are intuitive have been describing this stuff for a long time, right? We've been saying, hey, this happened to me, or I picked up on this. And people who don't have it don't necessarily believe it. So I'm really excited about the studies now that show it's totally real, and we're not crazy, and we're not always hallucinating. So that was the thing that they put in the study that I thought was interesting, is they put the word hallucinations because they wanted to try to tease out, well, is this like a form of schizophrenia or is this intuition? And so when you start looking into the brain and the different areas of interconnectedness in the brain, it gets fascinating. So my point was thinking about the sleep that you were talking about, like night terrors, one of the things that came to my mind was like epilepsy. Right? Epilepsy, there are different types of epilepsy where there's like partial Jacksonian, there's temporal lobe epilepsy. Well, in temporal lobe epilepsy, which affects your facial awareness, your emotions, time orientation, you know, it totally becomes a process of sensitivity when you have an epileptic seizure, because everything feels like you've been transported almost in a way through an epileptic seizure. And a lot of people that have those type of seizures, temporal lobe, they feel sensitive more often when they're coming out, and there's personality changes and there are other things. But when you look at temporal lobe epilepsy, yeah, it's a disorder. It's a disorder. Yeah. Do feelings of like being connected and interconnected to other people come out about that? Yes. Because it affects emotions, it affects spatial, it affects time orientation. And so there are parts of that that are very interesting, but doctors don't know. You know, they don't know where to put the sensitive part of it, because it's just the patient's experiences when they have a seizure, when they feel those different sensitive reactions when they're coming out of it.
Well, Courtney, I have to break in, and the reason I'm breaking in is because we have about another minute on the clock. Now, I have already booked my shows up until second week of August. But for some reason, I forgot July the 30th. Can we do a part two on July 30th?
Oh,
so
sure.
So you're not on lockdown?
Sure, yeah. Well, and I would love to go more into the medical part of it if that's interesting to you, because it sounds like
it
might be.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. After the show, we're going to shut it down now because we're running out of time. Down to seconds, so hopefully you'll call me back after we get off the air, and we'll put you in for July the 30th and do a second part. And I just want to say thank you, Courtney, for being on the show, because this topic is awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. It's very rich, and there's so much more to explore. So sure, we can do part two. That sounds great. I'm happy to.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Chris, for being here.
You're welcome.
And y'all have a great weekend.
Of course.
I love y'all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.